classic car is a high-quality car that's more than 20 years old. Today, I'm applying that same standard to fantasy fiction. Here's my top 10 completed classic fantasy series. Hi, I'm Jim, the father of Fantasy for the Ages, a father and son show where we talk about fantasy, science fiction, and other nerdy things that we enjoy. Today, my son Zach, he's off doing other things. You've just got Jim, the father, with you for a quick take episode where, again, I'm discussing my top 10 completed classic fantasy series. If you enjoy this, don't forget to let me know by hitting the like button down there. And if you haven't subscribed to our channel yet, we hope you will. We got gobs and gobs of content out here for you to explore and enjoy. Now, as the father of this show, I'm not afraid to admit I'm getting up there a bit in the years. The good news is that gives me so much more time that I've been able to enjoy reading fantasy fiction than the youngin', my son. Now, he's got his tabs on so much of the current stuff that's out there, and I get recommendations from him that I enjoy. But there's some great classic fantasy that he's a little scared to try because it's too old. And sometimes he's missing out. From all those books I've been able to experience over the years, I'm pulling out what I consider the best of the best. Classic fantasy series that are complete. Nothing left undone, no books we're pining away for and maybe never going to see. For this list, I considered any series that had its first book published prior to 2004. So at least the beginning of the series is old enough to be considered classic. Many of these, the entire series, is old enough to fit that classic date. But again, I can fudge with where some of the later books come out, but they must have started before 2004. Also on this list, you'll get none of that A Song of Ice and Fire incompletion trash. You won't see Glenn Cook's The Black Company here yet either. That one's an odd one. Cook officially, in an interview about 15 years ago, expressed the intention for two more books in his series, and he's only given us one of them. So officially, there's still one final book that's supposed to end the series that's yet to come. Now, he's 79 now. Is he going to write it? We don't know, but I'm still not going to be able to include it on this list. So I only considered a series for this classic list if it is complete. That doesn't mean there can't be some spinoffs, some related series, but the actual main narrative of the story, if it's complete, that section, that narrative chunk, that can make my list. So who do we have? Some of these might encourage you to check out some old classic fantasy. Number 10, though, is one I have to admit is classic fantasy, but I'm not the biggest fan. And that's the Fionnuala Tapestry. First book coming out in 1984. And that's by Guy Gavriel Kay. This is a trilogy, three books. Why am I mentioning it? Well, it is definitely epic fantasy, and it spurred this author on to write some much better stuff. There are many fans of the Fionnuala Tapestry, but it just didn't really work for me. There's nothing really wrong with it. It just, the vibe didn't hit, and there were a few things, especially in book one, that I just plain old didn't like. It's portal fantasy that takes the Arthurian legend and reinvents it in a very creative way. You've got college students from our world getting sucked into this fantasy realm where some pretty amazing things happen. But again, because it was successful, Guy Gavriel Kay goes on to write Tigana, a standalone fantasy novel that's one of my favorite, and other works that I've yet to read but are on my TBR because Tigana, man, that one's great. But you had to have the Fionnuala Tapestry first. Where do you begin if you want to read it? Look for The Summer Tree. Again, a 1984 publication. Number 9, The Chronicles of Thomas Covenant the Unbeliever, which begins in 1977 with Lord Foulsbane. This is by Stephen R. Donaldson, and all told, there are 10 books. This is a dark portal fantasy. So So again, you've got characters from our world ending up in another world, mashing up their perceptions with this very fantastical place. The characters that are our main characters are very broken people. That's where some of this darkness comes from. Their skewed perception of the world around them makes for some really harsh and challenging plot elements. You just cannot believe the decisions they are making sometimes, especially Thomas Covenant. This dude takes depression to a whole new level. And denial. Written over a 36-year span, this has an initial trilogy, followed by a second trilogy, and finally, many years later, by a quadrilogy to bring it all home. It's excellent. And Zach tried it, didn't feel it worked for him anymore. This one does feel to him too old. But step back into the past, people, and experience the masterfulness of the Chronicles of Thomas Covenant, The Unbeliever. Again, Lord Foulsbane, book one. My eighth series, The Dark Tower by Stephen King. This began in 1982. The complete series has 7 novels and 2 novellas. Why read this one? Why include this in my top 10? Well, this is King's epic fantasy opus, and perhaps his best work overall. He wrote the series over a span of 30 years, while he's publishing so much else. He is such a prolific author. He was doing Brandon Sanderson before Brandon Sanderson was born. So to have so much else, quality work out there, and yet still be able to return again and again to the Dark Tower series, incredible. And then this series, it ties much of the Kingverse together into a greater master meta-narrative. Again, Stephen King, one of the best storytellers of our age. So The Dark Tower is worthy. Where do you begin this one? Well, 1982 was The Gunslinger, which has a little different feel than the rest of the series, but gives you enough to whet your appetite and enjoy what's coming. Number 7, the Harry Potter series, which began in 1997. This is by J.K. Rowling. There are 7 books in the Harry Potter series. Why include this one? Well, this series brought many of today's fantasy readers into the genre. I read these out loud to my entire family when the kids were young, and it was delightful. Some really good memories from those days. It's a great, accessible fantasy tale that gets progressively darker as you move through the books. I remember discussions of, ooh, do we keep reading these out loud to the kids? As they really, books 5, 6, 7 go harsh. It does a nice job of aging up as the characters age up, and I appreciate that touch. It also has amazing film adaptations. Where do you begin? Well, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, if you're in the United States. If you're in the rest of the world, look for Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, which is the name the book should have. The Sorcerer's Stone is the dumbed down version because Americans aren't smart enough. That was some publisher's decision. Whatever. My 6th one on the list, The Rift War Cycle, beginning in 1982. This is primarily written by Raymond E. Feist, but 4 other authors did collaborate with him on some of the books, including Jannie Wirtz for the Empire Trilogy, which is books 4, 5, and 6 of a 31-book series. Why do I include this one? The series not only has 31 books, it stretches over 31 years. And yet it manages, over that great span of books, to carry through one primary storyline. Oh, there's lots of other different stories told, but there is still one primary storyline that stretches the whole series. A storyline that's about Pug, our one primary character, and Midkemia, his world of birth. It's a series that stretches not only through 31 books, 31 years, but in story over hundreds of years, and yet finds a way to logically and realistically maintain a few characters all through the series. Now, fantasy, so we're talking magic, of course. But that also means Feist introduces new main characters to interact with Pug and these other few core characters, You know, there's others that we meet in the early books that go away, die, age out of the series, get murdered, things happen. And he brings in new characters that are important, significant, and gets us to actually care about them too. So to have transition over time and yet still engage with us with meaningful personalities and plot points that we care about, nicely done. Oh, and then finally, I mentioned Midkemia, the world that is our primary world, but there's another world involved which has such a different culture and uniqueness to it. And the blending of these two cultures, the clash, is just brilliantly done. Where do you begin? Well, you begin with Magician, book one of the series, unless you're in the U.S. Again, what is it with publishers judging the U.S. customer base? They decided Magician was too big, too much, something. They split it into two. So in the U.S., look for Magician, Apprentice. Number five on my list, The Dragon Riders of Pern, which starts in 1968, so that puts it way back ahead of the rest of these. This is by Anne McCaffrey, and I'm only talking about the first 11 books of the series. Theoretically, this is a series that more books can still be written on. Anne McCaffrey has passed away, but she has two children who have written books in the Pern universe. But the core story is the first 11 books. Everything after that is just adding more flavor, more fun, more details, some backstory, but those 11 books start and end the primary story of Pern. And it's incredible, which is why it's on this list. Not only is it an incredible story that gets you swept up in what's happening, it's also primarily by a female author in a very much male-dominated field at that time. And it's not really fantasy, which makes this even more impressive for Anne McCaffrey to have broken through with Pern, because this is a science fiction series that reads like fantasy. So I have no problem putting it on this fantasy list, but it's really science fiction, even with dragons, which of course is another reason why it can make a top 10 list. We love our dragons, and these dragons are freaking incredible. The entire series has excellent plots, great tension, followed by very satisfying resolutions, book after book. And then, of course, there's Master Harper Robinson. If you know, you know. Where do you begin this one? Dragonflight, book one, is where it all began, 1968. And that's book one of the original trilogy, although that's a bit of a misnomer, because really the first six books go together, because they interweave. And if you read book three before book four, it doesn't work so well. So really, you should read book one and two of the original trilogy, then read book four and five of the second trilogy, the Harper Hall of Pern, then go back and read book three, and then book six. It's complicated. There's reasons. Just trust me, it works. Now, the series, like I said, does continue beyond this core story. In fact, it more than doubles from those first 11, but that initial story is just powerful. Number four on the list, Shannara, beginning in 1977. This is written by Terry Brooks, a 35-book series. Why do I include it here? Terry Brooks is writing what initially feels like very traditional fantasy, very comfortable elements, but after not too long, you discover, he reveals, this is really a post-apocalyptic story. Blending magic and science throughout the series in some really creative ways makes for some fun reveals and just takes what looked like traditional fantasy and makes it creatively fresh and new. And I really enjoy that about this series. The blend and balance and imbalance of magic and science throughout is one of the most captivating elements of Shannara. And then there's the whole druid thing, which is tied very closely to magic and science. I love his perspective and version of druids. I mean, we know druids from Dungeons and Dragons. We know druids from ancient Celtic history, but these druids, They're something special. And then there's the way that throughout these 35 books, Terry Brooks chooses to have magic and technology progress, grow, change. It keeps it so interesting, so fresh. You're not sure what's going to happen next, because these books do happen over centuries, many centuries over this 35 book span. And he manages to progress society in some cool ways. There are two different trilogies that are actually back before the initial Shannara trilogy. So it's not all moving forward. We've got some throwback stuff, but that only enriches your understanding what's happening, especially the post-apocalyptic part. Where do you begin? The Sword of Shannara, the very first book. It is not even close to the best book. It's safe to say it could be the worst book. It was Terry Brooks' first book, and it shows. But he figures things out very quickly, and book two is amazing. So The Sword of Shannara is fundamentally important to understand the rest of the series. Read it, but don't judge the series by that one book. Judge it by book two. You'll be happy. I said completed series. When he published the final book in 2021, Terry Brooks said, "I'm done. That's it. Shannara's over." And that's still true. The primary story is finished. So it belongs on this list. But doing my research, I found there is a new book coming out set for March of 2025. But it's a throwback. It's a book that's just going to give us, like the Pern books, giving us some more flavor and elements of a character that we heard about but saw very little of in the actual series. So we'll see what he's going to do with these, because I'm sure there's going to be more than one extra books. But they're not advancing the primary story, so I can still put it on the list. But Terry Brooks, you almost made me a liar. All right, number three on my top 10 completed classic fantasy series, The Lord of the Rings. I mean, come on, this had to be here somewhere, right? This starting in 1954 by J.R.R. Tolkien, the grandfather of all fantasy we have to enjoy today. There's three books in this, though technically it's six. They published these books as book one and two, book three and four, book five and six. Of course, it also technically could have been one book with six sub-books. But they were like, Tolkien, we can't publish something that big. So there was interesting conversations going on. Plus, there was a paper shortage at the time. It's all complicated. But here we have The Lord of the Rings. So why does this get to be here? Well, the incredible world building that Tolkien introduced has been an example and a foundation for so many other fantasy writers over the years. The scope of the story he created, the massive backstory behind it all, which comes to life in the Silmarillion for us. You just can't help falling in love with the world Tolkien designed, as well as the characters he populates it with. Also, just the fact that through this publishing conversation with Tolkien, they accidentally established the precedent of fantasy trilogies. It's kind of like, oh, well, that worked. That wasn't a thing before The Lord of the Rings, a trilogy. Now, you got a lot of authors who decide to write a trilogy and actually structure their books similarly to the way Tolkien's were designed. Very interesting. Deserves a place in the top 10. Where do you begin? Again, the 1954 publication of The Fellowship of the Ring. And unlike Shannara, this thing's hitting on all cylinders from book one. I got two left. So number two, The Wheel of Time. Started in 1990, written by Robert Jordan, finished the final three books by Brandon Sanderson, based heavily on Robert Jordan's notes after he had passed away. So we've got 15 books. That's 14 core story books and one shorter prequel book. Why do I include it on this list? Well, I mean, come on. The amazing characters, the highly original world building. Jordan was heavily influenced by Tolkien. You can see it especially in the first book, but just in his commitment to really filling out a complete, well-shaped, complex world in which to write such a story. Very Tolkien-esque, though not a Tolkien ripoff. Jordan is very original in much of what he does. Many people see elements of The Fellowship of the Ring in book one of The Wheel of Time, but that's not a ripoff. That's an homage. Jordan was very intentional in that. He wanted to have the same sort of feel and then go completely his own way. Also, another thing I favor of the Wheel of Time that I think makes it worthy to represent here is way before many other books were doing it, this has a great balance of male and female significant characters. When other authors were writing things in 1990, it was a male-dominated fantasy world. And the women were showpieces, an occasional enchantress, but they weren't on an equal par with the men, and they really are in the Wheel of Time. It's woven into the foundational understanding of the world Jordan created that there needs to be balance. And he shows it even in the balance of characters. One other shout out for this book is its use of foreshadowing. I have found very little that has so much amazing in-your-face foreshadowing that you don't necessarily catch until the reread. So this is a beautiful story to reread. I have reread The Wheel of Time many times, so I can vouch for that. Where do you begin? Well, that's The Eye of the World, book one, which came out in 1990, as I said. Which brings me to number one. Come on, a whole bunch of you were thinking The Wheel of Time was going to be my number one on this list, but no, it is not. I am actually putting as my number one a series I haven't finished. But you know what I'm talking about now. This is Malazan, Book of the Fallen by Steven Erikson. First book came out in 1999, and I'm referencing the 10-book core series. Now, there are other books written by Ian C. Esselmont, as well as additional books written by Steven Erikson that are all in the Malazan world. But the core story is these 10 epically huge, massive books. I'm on book 8 right now. I have been impacted by these books in a way that has not happened before. They are just so, so well written, so deep, yet whimsical at times. I've never read anything so epic in its scope, so deep yet still entertaining. I mean, you don't get bogged down by the depth, even though it may take you forever to read it. It's so beautifully written and yet never feels like it's dragging. I can spend hours in this series and just be glad there's more to read. And Steven Erikson truly respects the reader. He demonstrates this by leaving you to work out what's going on in the story. He does not spoon-feed anything to you, and that's part of the fun. Where do you begin? Book one is Gardens of the Moon, which does not make a lot of sense when you read it. But the further you get into the series, the more amazing you realize Gardens of the Moon was. And that's incredible right there. All right, that's my top 10. I am going to throw in 3 honorable mentions. These are all honorable mentions because I have not read them at all. They're on my TBR. What I've heard about them, what I researched, says they're probably worthy to include on the list. Again, not my top 10, but they might be on someone else's. That would be the Rune Lords series, started in 1998, 8-book series by David Farland. Brandon Sanderson has referenced David Farlane as one of his inspirations as a writer. Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn by Tad Williams. This is a trilogy. First book came out in 1988. I really look forward to reading that. Everyone who reads it is like, this is incredible. And the Draenei series, starting in 1984 with Legend by David Gemmell. 11 books in the series. I've got everything Gemmell wrote on my TBR. I haven't read a single thing by him yet. That feels embarrassing to my fantasy cred. But the Draenei series, foundational good stuff in the classic fantasy fiction. There you go. Let me know in the comments what you think of the list. Is there anything you would put on your top 10 that I didn't mention on my top 10 or in the honorables? Let me know. Again, they have to have started before 2004. To fit the classic list, and they must be completed. But I welcome any comments that you have about what I had to say. And again, don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you next time.